Wake up call.
This is Wake Up Call.
Another kind of daytime radio program.
On the SportsMap Radio Network.
Presented by Rocket Mortgage. When you need certainty in the home buying process with a loan that fits your life, Rocket can.
Live from the O'Reilly Auto Parts Studios, alongside Ron Culver, here's Tony D.
And glad you could be with us. It is hour two here on Wake Up Call on the SportsMap Radio Network. Coming up, Wally Agumile will join us, defensive end, former defensive end for the Chicago Bears and the Miami Dolphins. We'll get his defensive perspective of Super Bowl 55. He faced Tom Brady in college when he played for Indiana, played him a couple of times in the pros, but he also went to Super Bowl 41 when the Bears took on Indianapolis and Peyton Manning. And it's funny because we're going into the 55th Super Bowl, and a lot of the Super Bowls, you know, we're not ever going to be affected by the weather because they were played in domes, and a lot of it is in Southern California where it hardly ever rains. But it is surprising that the Super Bowls that we've had in Florida, we've really only had one that was really remembered for the weather, and that was Super Bowl 41, where it rained. You might remember Prince playing Purple Rain in the rain for the halftime show. We thought when we went to New York for the Super Bowl between the Broncos and the Seahawks, we could get snow and frigid temperatures, but even that Super Bowl, the weather really didn't play a factor. For whatever reason, when we've played outdoors, especially in a humid area like Florida, we haven't really gotten rain. But you never know. You never know. But I do remember that one. And I remember because I thought that that rain sort of limited Peyton Manning a bit in that Super Bowl. And, you know, they had one big downfield touchdown. I think it was a blown coverage by the Bears in that one. But other than that, it wasn't this aerial assault that Manning was able to do because of the rain. And the Bears were being led by Rex Grossman, and they had a spectacular defense. Wally Agumile was one of the premier players for that team. He was a team captain for the Bears that year. But we normally have just gotten good conditions, pristine conditions for the game. It is forecasted to be like that in Tampa on Sunday. And, you know, never said, I'm one of those people that I don't want it. I don't want the weather to be a factor. I know it's kind of goes counterintuitive to what we all like about football, weather and whatnot, play in elements. I kind of like it when it's when we can watch team versus team and not worry about how weather may affect the wind or something along those lines. But Super Bowl 41 was certainly remembered for that. We'll talk more about what we can expect on Sunday. Got the good, the bad, and the dumb coming up this hour as well. Hit us up on Twitter at Tony D Radio, at Ron Culver. That's Ron with two N's.
You're listening to Wake Up Call on the SportsMap Radio Network.
Presented by Rocket Mortgage. Home loans that fit your life. Rocket can.
Live from the O'Reilly Auto Parts Studios, alongside Ron Culver, here's Tony D.
All right, again, you can find us on Twitter at Tony D Radio, at Ron Culver. That's Ron with two N's. Your thoughts again, Super Bowl 55 coming up, and we're going to have more fun this week. We've got Wally Agumile coming up this hour. Like, later in this week, Jack Youngblood is scheduled to join us, right? Formerly of the L.A. Rams.
Yeah.
Played Super Bowl 14 on a broken leg is what he's very famous for. And Billy White Shoes Johnson is also scheduled to join us sometime this week.
Can you do anything on a broken leg?
See, that's
I'm
what I'm
talking about
ask.
You personally. I'm not saying just like random people.
I don't know how they do it. Like when I watched the Tiger Woods documentary and he was like, he played the U.S. Open on a broken leg. Remember, he had to play a playoff against Rocco Mediate too. It wasn't just a Sunday round. They had to play an 18-hole playoff the next day. And I'm like, how? How did he do that? Like, literally, how did he do that? Why didn't he just collapse? Like, when I think of broken legs, my image is shattered.
Right.
So maybe it's just a crack. So it's technically
but
a broken
still,
leg,
I
but
mean,
it's still in place.
That's got to be painful, right?
Got to be. It's
I mean, there
horrible.
Was the reports that Cole Beasley had been playing on a broken leg, like, through the playoffs.
Yeah, that's incredible to
and
me.
I just sit back and I think about I'm like, how? I'm
to
done.
Know you're to know the level of hit that you're going to take, like to be familiar with that, that has to be even more courageous. Because I wouldn't do it because, like, if I was transported like a quantum leap into Cole Beasley's body, I'd be like, get me off this field now. I don't know what to expect.
Right.
Like I don't know. But for Beasley to know, like, I've been doing this for a long time. I know what it feels like to get hit by a defensive end or a defensive back or whoever's ever tackling me. And I got this broken leg. That's even more incredible.
I don't see how Jack Youngblood was able to do it.
Too, neither.
Because all you're using is your legs. I mean, you're using upper body, but you're driving with your legs the entire time. I mean, I can kind of make an argument with Cole Beasley, like, all right, you know, you're not really in on all plays. You know, take the Randy Moss theory of football.
Right.
That you don't have to go 100% the entire time. Because if you know a play's not coming towards you or it's on the opposite side of the field, you can kind of mail it in.
And I'm sure back in 1980, which was 100 years ago, it was like, and if that thing falls apart, we just saw it off, Jack. Don't you worry about it. Drink some whiskey and we'll just gnaw that thing off.
Bite back down here on this locker. Piece of wood.
Wish we could do something like surgery, but we can't. We'll just have to saw it off. Like, think about, like, the advancements in medicine in the last 41 years that allows you to sort of, all right, we can see it. We can see it in different. Jack Youngblood played with a broken leg and was probably like, it's broken. All right. Well, we'll just wrap it together as tight as we can and hope for the best.
Well, that's like, remember Philip Rivers playing on a torn ACL?
Yeah, exactly.
The reports that came out, I'll never forget it during the game. It's like, well, he can't hurt it anymore.
Right. Yeah.
Like, oh, that's better.
Yeah, that's it. That's the result. That's funny. can't hurt it more. It's crazy. So we are no real injuries yet, but we had a couple of players on the COVID list for the Chiefs, but not the players that you are really hoping stay off the COVID list. Like, seriously, what if Patrick Mahomes somehow gets COVID between now and Super Bowl Sunday?
Push the Super Bowl back.
You got to be. Yeah, completely, right?
Just push it back.
I made the argument to people who were talking about the Browns, right? People were saying, like, oh, the NFL, they've got to push. I'm like, no, they don't. But they can if they want, but they don't. You know, if Kevin Stefanski can't coach, he can't coach. No need to upset the ship. But the Super Bowl is a different boat. Right? I mean, it's like if Patrick Mahomes can't play Sunday because of COVID.
I know.
You think they'll be like, how about Tuesday? Can we do this Tuesday?
And would we want to see Tom Brady versus Chad Henne?
Yeah, who's exactly.
Tom Brady's backup?
Jarrett Stidham? No, he was Patriots guy.
Although Tom Brady versus Chad Henne, there's a storyline there.
Oh, yeah, because they both played at Michigan. That's right, yeah. Who is the backup for the Buccaneers? I think it's somebody we know. I'm going to look this up because I don't think it's a no-name guy like a college kid you've never heard of.
Okay, I got it. Let's see.
I think it's like a legit backup there that hardly ever has gotten time. Blaine Gabbert.
Oh, Blaine.
It's not. Now, don't get me wrong. I'm not saying he's an NFL superstar, but he's a guy you know. Blaine Gabbert. And Antonio Brown could be available. Would you just make the Super Bowl even more fun?
Do Antonio Brown and Le'Veon Bell hug it out at any point, you know, after the game? Do they seek each other out and you know, turn to the camera and go, hi, Ben?
Yeah, you know what I was thinking about? That's funny that you mentioned that, because you know how I said at the beginning of the show last hour, it's like, you know, nobody really expected Tom Brady to take shots at Bill Belichick, right? I mean, no, we weren't really thinking he was going to do that. But Antonio Brown could take a shot at the Raiders, right? Like, not even so much the Steelers, but the way Mike Mayock just came out in that press. Remember when he came out and was like, he basically ripped Antonio Brown right in front of everybody. Remember that?
I get the feeling that Antonio Brown doesn't even remember his time with the Raiders.
Probably not, because we barely do, because it was so
brief.
Did
he even play a game? He didn't even play a game.
No,
for
he did
him,
not
right?
play a game. In fact, that was the whole thing of Hard Knocks, was the entire Antonio Brown saga, which ended up with bye. Like his arrival, problem, and then goodbye. That was basically the whole episode, the whole season. Yeah, and then he went to New England, and he had that problem. That woman accused him of harassment.
But he did get one game in.
And he got one game in, and apparently that was enough for Brady to go, we're hooked.
We're best mates for life.
We're best mates. I will make sure wherever I go, you go. He's like, I'm ready to go, Captain. And Rob Gronkowski, too. Rob Gronkowski is riding this Brady train to another Super Bowl. Good for him. He was like, I'm done. No, I'm not done. Why would I be done? Tom Brady's playing and playing for somebody else. And it's a lot more fun.
And it's warm.
I'll go there. And
Florida.
It's warm. And I can be shirtless and I can do my crazy antics and nobody seems to care. I'll just go there.
I mean, think about how this season started. Tom Brady got busted throwing passes in a park.
Right. That's right.
That's how the Buccaneers see the start. And walking into the wrong house.
And walked into a neighbor's house. Walked into a neighbor's house because he thought it was Byron Leftwich's house. Yeah. Remember that?
Yeah. That's how his Buccaneers tenure started. That seems like forever ago. And now he has a chance to bring home a trophy. Or actually, not bring it home. Just leave it there, I guess, right?
Ndamukong Suh has a chance to win a Super Bowl. One of the dirtiest players in the league.
Jason Pierre-Paul,
who should have been out forever. I don't know. I still am amazed he was able to be a professional football player blowing his hand off with a firework. It's incredible to me. It's incredible. And he has a chance to win a Super Bowl, right? I mean, it's all fantastic. Good for them. Ryan Succop, by the way, you probably don't know this about Ryan Succop, their kicker. Mr. Irrelevant went to South Carolina.
There you go.
And Ryan Succop, for whatever reason, the ladies really loved him because apparently he was a pretty good-looking kid, but you would appreciate it. He got a lot of love being a kicker.
Of course he does.
Of course he did. So
everyone loves a kicker.
There's the Buccaneers.
Kicker doesn't get mangled as much.
That's right.
Doesn't need to really take steroids, yet he gets all the NFL fun.
And could win the game for you. He could send your school into a tizzy by kicking you through the uprights with an upset victory over whoever.
He's the reason you storm the field.
Right. Exactly. You know, it's 42 yards for the freshman. And just this little kid who looks like he's in a Halloween costume goes trolling out. And he's like lining up the game-winning kick. And he kicks it through the uprights and the student body goes crazy. And then he's campus hero. So, but this, you know, listen, in all seriousness, this is an interesting roster of Buccaneers players that have all had some backstories. Leonard Fournette, right, in Jacksonville. Superstar in college at LSU. Jacksonville didn't work out. Now he's on this team that has a chance to win a Super Bowl. We talked about Brown and Gronkowski. A lot of guys who have put up with a Buccaneers team that was good but not quite good enough. Right? I mean, Devin White, their draft pick, who I really liked coming out of college. Shaq Barrett, who had an outstanding season. You know, with the Chiefs, a lot of the players on the Chiefs that you're going to talk about were there last year and won the Super Bowl. You know, Le'Veon Bell, no, but the main players for the Chiefs. But this Buccaneers team got a lot of interesting stories and a lot of sort of like a championship for some of these guys. You know, it would just be interesting given where they were a year ago. 2 years ago. I mean, it just really is incredible when you think about Jason Pierre-Paul. You know, like, I didn't know what his career was going to be like, seriously. And I didn't know what Antonio Brown's career was going to be like. You kind of get the feeling like it's either done or it's going to be minimized. But now they're ready to win the Super Bowl.
I mean, literally feels like the Buccaneers are the Pirates.
Yeah.
Like, literally Pirates.
Yeah, right.
Because they're all cast-offs.
They're all cast-offs. Just a group of guys coming together and hopefully winning a title for the city of Tampa, who've been droughtless since the Cup was won a couple of months ago.
Yeah.
God bless them.
Yeah, title town.
Wally Ogunghale will join us from the Chicago Bears and the Miami Dolphins coming up next. He's also got a new interesting career helping athletes break down their finances. You hear a lot of athletes going broke. He's trying to help that. But we'll also get his defensive perspective on the two quarterbacks in the Super Bowl. It's coming up next on Wake Up Call.
This is Wake Up Call on the Sports Map Radio Network.
Presented by Rocket Mortgage.
Live from the O'Reilly Auto Parts Studios, alongside Ron Culver, here's Tony D.
All right, let's go out to the Progressive guest line. Progressive, making it easy to bundle your home and car insurance. Get your quote at progressive.com today. Wally Ogunghale joins us. 11 years in the NFL, played for the Dolphins, but you might remember him for the Bears, where as team captain, he helped lead Chicago to the Super Bowl 41 against Indianapolis. Nowadays, he's with UBS, helping them with their strategic athletes and entertainment client segment. How are you, Wally?
Good morning. How are you?
Good. Glad you could join us. Before we get things started, let's talk a little bit about UBS and your partnership with them in the Strategic Athletes Entertainment Client segment. What is that about?
What it is it's just my opportunity to, you know, make a difference in the financial world when it comes to dealing with athletes and entertainers. From my own experience, coming up and playing an 11-year NFL career, I just had some of the unfortunate luck of bumping into the wrong advisors that I thought really understood what I was coming from, why I had to save money for my family and my communities. And I always wound up with the wrong guys. And getting with this partnership with UBS, I realized that, one, I feel like all of our high-profile athletes and celebrities should be at these bigger, more reputable firms where actually someone's watching. And if there's a problem, I can, you know, bring it up with someone. And this is just my opportunity to open the eyes of the industry, get us into a place where we can communicate with our athletes and entertainers in a way that most people don't communicate. People don't understand the jargon of finance sometimes, the acronyms and the crazy words. And I'm trying to make sure that we bring the level of understanding to wherever our clients are.
And there are a lot of athletes who don't come from a background of money, and then all of a sudden they're being given a ton of money, and it is not uncommon to see them lose a lot of it.
Yeah, and that's, again, at the end of the day, it's really just trying to make sure that we understand the language of finance, and that's what happens. It's like speaking, you know, German if you've never spoken before. It's just such a hard thing to do, is to jump into if that's just not your background. But we've left it to the athletes to fend for themselves. And I think the industry has to do a better job of really holding the hands of their clients, teaching them exactly what they need to know. And if they don't understand, they shouldn't invest. Just because I was a former athlete doesn't mean I should open up a gym. I don't know a thing about business, baby. You know, so I think that's what we're trying to do, is just put a little bit of our expertise in the hands of our FAs and hopefully projecting that out into, when I say FAs, our financial advisors, and projecting that out into our clients and their lives and their families.
All right, so Wally, we're talking to you during Super Bowl week. You went to Super Bowl 41 against Indianapolis down in Miami, and it's probably, as much as we try to remember every Super Bowl, this one had an impact because of the rain. When you played in that Super Bowl, it was one of the first ones that we could see the impact of weather. What was it like to play on the biggest stage where weather was a factor?
Yeah, you know, for a defensive player, in my mind, I think, you know, weather shouldn't, you know, come into play, whether it's hot, cold, rainy. But for offense, you did see, you know, especially with a guy like Peyton Manning, and we had, you know, quarterback Wes Grossman, who had a big arm and we wanted to go down the field. You know, it wound up being, you know, a running attack, and then turnovers, right? A lot of yep. The game, we turned the ball over. And I think a lot of that had to do with the weather and the fact that it was, felt like a monsoon out there for most of the game.
From a defensive perspective, and again, 11 years in the league, Pro Bowl player, you're looking at this Super Bowl, Brady, who you've seen before, you saw him in college too, but also Patrick Mahomes. Mm-hmm. When you see Patrick Mahomes, put your defensive eyes on him for a second. What do you see? How would you counter him?
Oh, man. You know, Patrick Mahomes might be the first quarterback that I just wouldn't understand how to attack. He's really good with the blitz. He's good with pressure. He's good on the run. He's good in the pocket. He improvises. I just don't see where his weaknesses are. I think probably Father Time would be, and if he could stay healthy, that'd probably be his biggest opponent. But right now, if you're looking at it just from a fan's perspective, I just don't see any weakness in his game. He can deliver the ball from any angle, down the field, short, long. I mean, it's just amazing to watch.
If you got in a time machine and went back to the time at Indiana and you a game against Michigan and said, by the way, that quarterback's going to be the greatest of all time, would you have been able to sell that to a younger Wally?
You wouldn't have been able to sell that to Tom Brady.
That's true. Good point.
you wouldn't have been able to sell that to Tom Brady. The funny thing about it is, even in your wildest dreams, right, let's say you're going to be a Hall of Famer, great. You're going to be an All-Pro, great. You're going to win a Super Bowl or two, great. But to be six-time Super Bowl winner, now arguably the GOAT, it's probably not even arguably anymore, the GOAT at that position, I just don't see how anyone could have predicted that one.
You have a great arc of your story because you were such a star at Indiana, but then you are injured, and then you go undrafted, and then you go to the Dolphins, and then you fight for a starting job. You get the starting job, and you turn it into a stellar Pro Bowl career. On that journey, what is it like to go through the incredible highs and the incredible lows of being not knowing where your career would be headed because of an injury?
Yeah, man, that's a great question, and it does make for a unique story. I think in my mind, I was able to see every aspect of an NFL player, right? Undrafted free agent, starting low man on a totem pole to becoming captain of a team, going to a Super Bowl, playing in a Pro Bowl, getting the big contract. So I saw it all, right? And I think I can appreciate where everyone's level of enter whenever they enter into the NFL, whether you're a first round draft pick, I get the pressure that the first pick of the draft has. Like, it's got to be the world on his shoulders. And then as an undrafted free agent, the guy who no one really thinks is going to make the team, and it's politics involved, and it's a business, and there's probably a chance that you're not going to make the team, right? And then when you do, then you still got to keep proving yourself every single year. Like, no, you guys made a mistake. You made a mistake. All 32 teams made a mistake. And they're like, well, did we? Well, try it again. Do it again next year. Well, do it again next year. And I had to do it again for, you know, almost four seasons before they finally said, you know what? All right, we're going to pay you. So I saw the whole gamut of it. The NFL is a business. I get it. But I wouldn't trade that experience of having to work my way through the ranks of the NFL to where I ended up.
It's so easy to look at Super Bowls, especially with quarterbacks these days, and say, well, Super Bowl 41, that was Peyton Manning's first Super Bowl. But you guys were a very, very good defense. How good of a defense were you guys going into that game in Miami?
Really, probably one of the best defenses I've ever seen. We had talent from in the secondary, talent at the linebacker position, obviously with Lance Briggs and Brian Urlacher, and then, you know, Tommy Harris, me, Alex Brown, Mark Anderson, Israel Adonijah. We were pretty stacked up. I would go to war with that defense any day, every time. We had, you know, Charles Tillman and Nathan Vasher. We were a turnover machine. We got after the ball. We got after the quarterback. We stopped running backs. I mean, you couldn't, in my opinion, when Devin Hester gave us that 7-point lead,
yeah,
in the first play of the game, there's no way I thought we were going to lose that game. It's just impossible. Not with that defense.
Wally Guglielmi joining us here on our Progressive Guest Line. Real quick before we let you go, just a quick prediction on who do you got for Sunday?
The old man that I am, knowing that I played with Tom Brady in college, and he's still, and he's giving interviews tomorrow, talking about he can go past 45. That part of me wants to root for the old man, right? But the truth of the matter is, I think the NFL needs this game. This is probably, in my opinion, going to be the changing of the guard in essence. And I think Patrick Mahomes takes the game, and KC wins their back-to-back.
Thank you so much for joining us. And again, with UBS and helping athletes and dealing with their finances. You know, you and I have probably only one thing in common, and that when we were younger, our teachers stopped at our last names and went, I don't even know where to go with this. So I'm just going to take a while.
Yeah, man. Absolutely. I just raised my hand. It's me.
Exactly.
Don't even try.
The same thing. Wally, yeah, good man. Luck to you. Thank you so much for everything. I appreciate your time.
Thank you. Anytime you need me.
You got Wally Guglielmi, former Chicago Bear and Miami Dolphin participant in Super Bowl 41, NFC champion Chicago Bears. They did lose that Super Bowl to Peyton Manning, but like he said, that was one of the best defenses to go into a Super Bowl. Progressive, quote, buy and save on home insurance with Progressive's new Home Quote Explorer, only at progressive.com. I always find that Super Bowl fascinating. I do, because remember how good Devin Hester was? Remember how good, like,
yes,
almost every time he had the ball, he would score? Almost, like, all throughout the whole season. It felt like I remember the Broncos kicked to him twice in a game, and regretted it both times. It was insane. And then you get to the Super Bowl, and he returns the kickoff, and it wasn't, you should be surprised when anybody returns a kickoff for a touchdown, right? And it's a rare thing.
But we weren't.
But it wasn't surprising at all.
Well, they had spent the entire pregame show saying, you know, the Colts, they shouldn't kick to Devin Hester. Devin Hester's going to return one back. And they said that the entire time.
Exactly.
First play of the game, boom, there it is.
It's probably one of the most unsurprising, like the Ravens and the Giants had back-to-back kickoffs, which both times you should be like, I'm living in an alternate universe. This should never happen ever. Devin Hester was like, yep, that's exactly what he was going to do, and everybody knew that's exactly what he was going to do.
It's just what I do.
It's what he does. He takes kicks and goes to the end zone. That's what he does. Good, the bad, and the dumb coming up next as we continue with Wake Up Call, Sports Map Radio.
Wake Up Call continues now on the Sports Map Radio Network.
Time for the good.
That's really nice.
The bad.
That's the bad guy.
And the dumb.
What an idiot. Oh, what a loser.
All right, it's time for the good, the bad, and the dumb on your Groundhog's Day. And just to remind you, the groundhog saw his shadow. So too bad, six more weeks of winter for those of you where winter is a big deal.
So you guys up in the northeast, which, by the way, I don't know how he's seeing a shadow.
I don't either. They got pounded yesterday.
I'm looking at the video right now. It is just nothing but snowfall coming down. So I think the fix might be in.
My relatives in New York were posting pictures on social media. I'm not kidding. Like feet of snow, like on top of their grills and porches and just buried in snow. You're right. I don't know how he saw his shadow. Ridiculous. What a lie.
Yep.
They better tell me how he saw it.
I'm thinking the fix is in. I'm thinking.
I think so too.
You know, in some betting circles, seeing the shadow was not the heavy favorite.
Not the heavy favorite at all. All right, what is the good of the day, Ron Coleman?
You know what the good of the day is? There's a little video going around, and it's of Nick Saban recruiting
someone. Oh, is he now? Yeah.
Recruiting a player, and it's on Zoom. And whoever was being recruited, I mean, it may not be good for him since he released his video. But he released a video of Nick Saban recruiting him.
Can you do that? Like, I guess don't you know can if as you a can recruit. But I guess there's nothing against you. I guess the NCAA wouldn't come against you. It just feels weird, doesn't it?
It does feel weird. Yeah. But first of all, I'm glad we moved it to here because I have two sound bites.
Okay.
That I wanted to play. I was only going to limit it down to one because the second one is kind of lengthy, but it's awesome.
Okay, let's go.
This first one is just Saban just listing Alabama's accolades.
One more championships. We won six championships in the last 11 years. We've been in the national championship game 8 out of the last 11 years. We've been in the playoffs 9 out of the last 11 years. We got more guys drafted than any school in the country. We had 64 guys playing in the league last year. The next school had 41.
That's pretty awesome. But here's the thing. Aren't you a little disappointed that Nick Saban just didn't go, Alabama, look it up. We kind of do good things.
Yeah, that's true.
Do you know what I mean? Would Belichick say to a free agent, we played in 9 Super Bowls and probably know that we went 6 of them. And
I guess
we tend to go to Super Bowls a lot.
You bring up a point because if he's talking to the player, if he's talking to the parents, they pretty much know football,
right?
And yeah. I guess maybe do you forget that he's been in the playoff 9 out of the last 11 seasons?
I'm trying to remember, you're right.
What were the two that he wasn't in? I don't remember that.
Some of those numbers that he mentioned, I was like, that's even more better. Like, that's better than I thought. Like, if you would ask me, what do you think Alabama's, you know, record is in this setting, I would have been like, oh, I didn't know it was that many. But it's kind of weird to hear him give his resume to an 18-year-old kid.
I know. Now, this next one is pretty much the three reasons why to choose Alabama. But I find, like, especially the last one, I never really thought about it, and it hits the nail on the head.
And, you know, everybody's going to tell you in recruiting, you know, oh, don't go to Alabama. You can play at our school before you can play there. They got all these good players there. You won't be able to play. You can play at our place earlier. I think that's the worst stuff that people can tell you. Like, first of all, when they tell you that, they're first of all insulting you. Right? Because I wouldn't be sitting here talking to you if you couldn't play here.
Right.
Number two, when they say you can play at our place before you can play at Alabama, they're just telling you Alabama's better than them. Number two. All right, then number three, is if you ask our players on our team, they'll tell you just the opposite. They'll tell you the competition may be better. Mm-hmm. You know, Marlon Humphrey will say, you play corner, first corner taken in the draft when he was a junior. Say, I had to cover Mari Cooper every day. Mari Cooper was the first receiver taken in the draft.
Right.
Cam Robinson played left tackle here and won the Alpha Trophy. Jonathan Allen played for the Redskins. He was the right end. He won the Erskine. They practiced against each other every day for 3 years. All those guys will tell you that made me better.
Right.
The competition made me better. The guy I practiced against was better than the guy I played in the game against.
Great point.
I don't know why I never thought of that.
Do you think John Calipari is like, oh, wait, hold on one second. They are insulting you if you go play somewhere else other than Kentucky. And competition makes you, this is good.
Yeah.
Well, when somebody tells you should go to Iowa because you could play, like, that's
you
insulting
right
to you.
Away.
You can play here. Iowa does have the best player in college basketball. But nevertheless, I think other coaches should be taking a cue from Nick Saban when people say, come here and you can play. That's an insult to you because they don't think you could play at Alabama. And I like the way Saban was just like, I wouldn't be talking to you if I didn't think you could play for me.
Exactly. Yep.
Right?
But I never thought about, Marlon Humphrey having to cover Amari Cooper.
Yes.
5 days
a week. That's a great point. Yeah, right?
Like, right? I don't know why that makes all the sense in the world. That just never registered in my mind. Like, yeah, you're covering one of the better wide receivers in the league day in and day out. That, of course, that's going to make you better.
So now the question is, that kid who posted that, he still go to Alabama now?
I don't know.
Or will Nick be like, well.
Did he already have his mind set on going to Georgia?
Yeah. Was he? Because now it's like Nick would be like, well, I did offer you a chance to come here, but you kind of leak stuff without telling me, so I don't know if I can trust you with our playbook.
And now I'm just going to bury you.
Yeah, exactly. Now, remember that whole thing about you can't play at Alabama that other coaches may tell you? That might be true now. That might be true. Yeah, that's great. Good job.
But it's just fun kind of getting that little, behind-the-curtain look at what
Saban
is. And if you watch the video, I mean, I'm sorry, Nick Saban is kind of smug through the whole thing.
He
know he wants to say, I'm the head coach of Alabama talking to you.
Yeah,
Zooming with you. What more do you want?
I didn't send a 27-year-old receivers coach to your house or to your Zoom meeting. I'm here. I'm the coach. You're talking to Nick Saban.
Nick bleeping Saban.
Real quick. Howard Schellenberger at Miami, right? When he was recruiting down in Miami, he wanted to build a fence around Miami, South Florida, right?
Yeah.
Because all the kids were going up to play in Oklahoma. So he said, no, we're building a fence around Miami. So he would go to some really rough neighborhoods. Howard Schellenberger would go to really rough neighborhoods. He'd pull up in a nice fancy car and he'd walk into houses. But he would leave his pipe sometimes. He would just leave it there. And so the whole neighborhood would be running and go, that's Howard Schellenberger's pipe. And you just knew that's what he was trying to do. He was trying to become the icon and to be like, when I come here to talk to you, you're going to play for me. You are not even going to think about going anywhere else. I'm here. I showed up at your house. I left my pipe here. You're playing at Miami. Sounds like Saban is like, when I'm on these Zoom calls with you, we're not messing around. Like, you come to Alabama. You don't think about, what are you going to play? Tennessee? What are you out of your mind? You're not playing. You're playing at Alabama. Exactly. All right, what's the bad of the day?
The bad of the day is Hollywood's wasting no time. Apparently, there's already a movie in the works about the GameStop saga.
Already? That was fast?
Yeah. Yeah. So
get me MGM, a screenwriter on, too.
MGM has acquired the book proposal. It's called The Antisocial Network. There's already a book written about the whole thing,
that's
too.
Unbelievable.
I don't know how these minds work.
That had to be pounded out, in overnight.
Yeah. It just started. I mean, he said the book's barely a week old.
This was like late last week.
Yeah, and MGM just scrambled to get on top of it and
That's
to
great.
Make sure they secure the rights for it. So
fantastic.
Coming to a theater near you, I mean, at this rate, next week? I don't know.
I know, I'm in Hollywood. I know you got to act fast in Hollywood or somebody's going to get it, I get. But shouldn't this story breathe a little more for, to see exactly how it all ends
up? I guess.
Up, right?
But and then maybe there's just
there's
no,
still going to be mean, an maybe, investigation. There's still going to,
maybe the movie isn't completely written yet.
But they got the rights
But they
to
got
it.
The rights
I
to
said,
it.
This will be a work in progress. We'll see where this goes down the road.
We don't know what the end line is yet.
It took a couple of years for The Big Short to come out about the housing crisis. This is amazing that it's like.
Right.
Like a week later, they're already talking movie. That's crazy.
Yeah.
I'm interested, though. I just hope
they dumb it down and explain it to me so I can really understand it. And be like, oh,
I do too.
That's what it was.
Oh, wow. Short selling.
I wish I could have been a part of that.
I had a couple of friends that got into day trading. I never did it. I never took some mama don't know money and played around with some stocks. I don't know what I'm doing. I don't know what I'm doing.
I hear you.
I'll just admit that.
Yeah.
And so I don't. All right, what's the dumb of the day?
I stumbled across this tweet, It's from a New York Times bestselling author, Chris DeRose. Now, I don't follow Chris DeRose. Maybe I should, because if he throws tweets out like this, this will make me think every once in a while.
Okay.
But, okay, so yesterday he put out this tweet. The Wonder Years premiered 33 years ago yesterday, 1988.
88, right. Okay.
Depicting events 20 years earlier. So it was depicting events 1968.
Right.
Then he goes, a similar show today would be set in 2001.
That's not fair.
I mean, doesn't that hurt a little bit?
That does hurt.
Like, I mean, I remember watching The Wonder Years, especially that first season, because I fell in love with Winnie Cooper. We all remember Kevin Arnold's first kiss.
Right, sure.
You know, him wearing that Joe Namath Jets, you know, knockoff jersey. At that time, 68 seemed like that was
A thousand years ago.
1,000 years ago.
Yeah.
And now you're telling me that if we were to make a similar TV show today, it would be set in 2001?
2001. Yeah, like 9-11. Like 9-11, you could put a show around. Yeah, maybe somebody should reboot this, because 2001 wouldn't be a terrible year, right?
No.
We just got through Y2K.
We got
America
through
America felt secure in its place in the world. A contentious election left us with George Bush. Little did we know that that year would end in tragedy and heartbreak.
Right.
Like, you could do a whole TV show on that.
You could.
That's wild. And that is really entering wild.
Yeah, isn't that?
That is more impressive of a time gap than when they did that with Back to the Future.
Yes.
Like, that doesn't feel right. Like, that doesn't feel like the math is right on that. You know what I mean?
It doesn't.
But it is.
You can't argue it.
Is it because we don't have defining?
Doesn't feel like 2001 was eons ago. Eons ago.
But here's the thing. Is it because we don't have it feels like the last few decades aren't defined by style, music, and culture? Is that it?
Maybe.
Like the 60s, you think of a certain dress, you think of a certain, all the political rallies, you think of like a country that is dealing with assassinations and unrest and protests war.
The 60s, arguably, for me, I think it was the most interesting decade in all of American history.
So then you go through the 70s, and then there's a change of style, there's a change of culture, there's a change of music, there's inflation and high oil prices and all of that. Then the 80s come, and then the 80s have got the decade of yuppies and money, and everyone's doing coke, and stocks are going through the roof, and all that. So you can say, in 1988, I'm going to start a TV show 20 years ago. But in that 20 years, it's going to feel like a world away because we've gone through these cultural changes. Whereas in the last 20 years, just technology seems to have gotten better.
I mean, yeah. You can say because in the 60s. You remember Kevin Arnold's parents very much were products of the 50s.
Right.
And just wanting to live a simple life.
Exactly.
You look at, remember Kevin's older sister. Character's name, I can't remember. I mean, she was the wild child. She was the hippie. She was the one going to all the protests and smoking weed and listening to strange music. And that would be so separate from her parents. I can't think of an equivalent. Like, we weren't that way. Think of 2001 somebody being, or maybe now. I don't know. It just feels like we're still the same as we were in 2001.
Good point. Yeah, it does.
I don't know.
It feels like smartphones and the computer and internet and all that stuff.
But, I mean, after 2001.
And 9-11 obviously affected the way we travel and all of that. But it doesn't feel like we're gone through different eras. You know, like, it does.
Well, I guess, you could go.
I'm overthinking this.
Yeah, but you could go, the Me Too generation not Me Too, it's all about me, the millennial generation.
Yeah, sure.
Where everything is for likes and clicks now.
Yeah, that's right.
I don't know. Just doesn't seem fair.
All right. That's the good, the bad, and the dumb as we continue. Wrap it up with a more LeBron when we come back on Wake Up Call.
This is Wake Up Call on the Sports Map Radio Network.
Presented by Rocket Mortgage.
Live from the O'Reilly Auto Parts Studios, alongside Ron Culver, here's Tony D.
All right, this hour of Wake Up Call presented by Rocket Mortgage. Rocket Mortgage is giving away millions during Super Bowl 55 with the Rocket Mortgage Super Bowl Squares Sweepstakes. See rules and enter for free at rocketmortgagesquares.com. LeBron James last night got heckled by an Atlanta Hawk fan who was sitting courtside. The man heckled him, and then I guess his wife got into LeBron, and they got removed.
LeBron said afterwards, he goes, I didn't think they deserved ejection. But raise your hand if you were surprised that there were people sitting courtside at an Atlanta Hawks game.
That's where I'm at. When was that allowed?
When was that allowed is right. It's one thing to be like, you can come in, but you got to sit way up there away from the players.
Yeah. I mean, right? I know they weren't behind the bench.
No, but they were close enough.
Is Atlanta getting a little more relaxed? Like, oh, like, you know, it's the opposite side of the court. They're nowhere near the bench.
I must be watching too many NBA games where no one is allowed to be in the arena, because I was like, how would that family get down on courtside at a time where they're really, really telling people they can't go to basketball games anymore?
Yeah.
Who's selling courtside seats during COVID-19?
Atlanta.
Apparently Atlanta. You must have to go through a bunch of tests in order to be that close.
Probably not. They probably just said, oh yeah, sure, your ticket, your seats
yeah
are
might
down
as well
there.
Yeah, exactly, go sit.
Or did they have seats like in the lower section and they just kept moving forward and one said a word?
I know, right? Like we all do when we buy the cheap seats with the obstructed view and then move our way down and we're like, oh yeah, must be in the front row. Really, that family got that close to LeBron James? You gotta be kidding me.
It's probably why LeBron was so ticked off.
Probably was. Wait a minute.
You're not even supposed to be here.
I didn't know regular people could be in this arena. You got to be kidding. All right. Jake Asman Show is coming up next. We'll see you tomorrow. Wake Up Call, Sports Map Radio.